Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your calls, we'll get to your tweets along the way over the next 60 minutes and get you set for the season opener between the Giants and the Cowboys come Sunday. Let's start, though, with the practice report, and nothing officially out yet, Paul, but the team was out on the field. The media was allowed out about 20 to 30 minutes ago, and it seems as if Odell Beckham is making progress in terms of testing out that ankle.
Well, we saw him yesterday doing a little bit of jogging and then doing some exercises on the side with the trainers, but today he's in full gear and he's running straight on sprints. And that is, from my viewpoint, that's an acceleration from where he was yesterday. Now, whether or not he does anything in practice, we don't know. The media has now been closed out of practice for the remainder of the session. And so we're going to have to wait for the Giants to tell us if he was limited or did nothing at all. But from the media portion, it is clear that he is as advanced as he's ever been since he sprained that ankle against Cleveland.
Now, Keenan Robinson was also in uniform, but he's on the side with the training staff. He appears to still be in concussion protocol.
It does appear that way, and, you know, I would say on the basis that he's not doing any running around, I would say that he's a lot further away from coming back than Odell Beckham Jr. is.
Now, in terms of yesterday's practice report, there are a number of other people on the list, but they all were full participants in practice. I just want to run you through them. Eli Apple with the ankle, Jay Bromley with the knee, Michael Hunter also recovering from a concussion, Tavarius King, his ankle, and Shane Smith, the quad. But all of those players that I just named were full participants in Wednesday's practice. When we hear perhaps the early injury report from Thursday's practice, we will let you know. We'll pass that on here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. In terms of the Dallas Cowboys, Paul, you know, one of the biggest storylines for them is some of the changes to their offensive line, and they seem to have indicated that they have solidified the left guard spot, and it looks like they're going to go with Chaz Green lining up next to Tyron Smith, the left tackle, because it was really a battle between Chaz Green and Jonathan Cooper, and then we know Lyle Collins is going to be the right tackle. So Collins moves from left guard to right tackle. That opened up a hole at left guard. So there is going to be a few new faces in terms of new spots for the Cowboys' offensive line. And I think that's something to watch considering the Giants' defensive line has a little bit more continuity.
I don't think there's any question that, you know, everybody's living off of the Cowboys' reputation from last year when they were one of the top three offensive lines. You can argue wherever you want to put the Raiders, the Titans, the Cowboys. They were the elite, okay? I think everyone's living off of that reputation and thinking, okay, Dallas has Ezekiel Elliott back, and they're going to be great on the offensive line too. Well, I think a lot of people are going to be in for a rude awakening when they actually realize that two-fifths of the offensive line has changed. It's not the same five anymore. You know, Lyle Collins is now moving out to right tackle, and while he did it really well in college, this is the NFL, and not everybody is capable of handling those speed rushes off the edge at the NFL level. And so Lyle Collins is going to be tested by JPP. And trust me, he will be tested. Can he pass it? Maybe he can. But nobody knows. So that, to me, is a very big deal. Even bigger than the move on the inside is the fact that Collins is playing right tackle. So it's not the same Cowboys offensive line. We know Ezekiel Elliott has barely gotten any reps, even in practice, because of all the stuff he's had to go through off the field. And so he can't be, if you want, I'm going to use a phrase here, turtle shell tough, which is what I usually call players after they go through a difficult training camp, although there aren't many difficult training camps anymore.
No two-a-days.
He's not turtle shell tough right now. You know, and you need to toughen your skin. You need to build up those calluses, you know, so to speak, to get ready for the regular season. Elliott hasn't been through that. So I don't think he's going to be very effective. I'm going to be flat out honest with you. I just don't. And so I think this all bodes well for the Giants.
Well, I would agree with you. I think a key matchup to watch is certainly JPP against Lyle Collins. I would say that to me is one to watch much more so than Janoris Jenkins against Dez Bryant. Now, people are going to look back at last year's stats, and Dez was limited to just two catches for 18 yards. Jenkins was on him for the most part. But this season, I think because of some of the changes on the Cowboys' offensive line and the importance of Dallas's running game, you know, Elliott, who you referenced, he had mixed results. If you go back to the two matchups last year, Paul, he had 51 rushing yards in the opener. Now, granted, that was his NFL debut. It was his first regular season game. Second matchup, a lot more success. He had 107 yards, but the majority of that came in the first half. He was very limited in the second half in terms of his production.
And I believe that came on 24 carries,
yes,
which for him would not be a great weekly average.
It was just under 5 yards per carry, though. It still turned out to be much better than the first matchup.
It was. Second half, he was virtually non-existent after they made some adjustments.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the thing that he does right now better than most is he's a bell cow guy. You know, once he gets rolling downhill and he gets his rhythm and he gains his momentum, you know, he's the kind of guy who you want to ride to the bank.
He's the workhorse.
I just don't see him being capable of doing that right out of the blocks, given his lack of work in the preseason and the distractions he's had to deal with. And he doesn't have his 5 starting offensive linemen back from last year. There are too many hurdles for me to believe that he's going to have a big game. And that's bad news for Dak Prescott.
Well, he certainly needs the running game because that was a big part of the offense last year. However, keep in mind, they do have Darren McFadden. They do have Alfred Morris, who have received the bulk of the reps during the course of training camp,
yeah,
as well as in
capable
the preseason
backs.
Game. So, I mean, I think they're in a good position. I get your point that maybe they don't bring Elliott back and give him 25 carries in this game. I wouldn't be surprised,
to be honest,
if that didn't happen.
I don't think he's got the gas in his tank to do that. I don't think he's prepared to do that. And if they do that, I think they're running the risk of getting him hurt,
given the fact that he hasn't been out there in many preseason
games. You overuse
games.
A guy.
Yeah.
I've had many conversations with former players in the last several years, guys who were in the old training camps, the two-a-days, and even the ones that were before the latest CBA, who broke their behinds during training camp. Even if they didn't have the two-a-days, they worked hard. And they come back and they watch this flag football stuff that the NFL has in training camp. And you know what they all say to me? There's no way for a bunch of these guys to say that they're going to be ready for week one. They tell me all the time, it's no wonder that the week one games are usually so sloppy and you usually have a bunch of guys getting hurt. Because guys who are not physically and mentally prepared for the regular season by the grueling type of training camps that they used to have are running the risk of not being what they're supposed to be. And I don't see any way Elliott can be what he's supposed to be. And I think I don't know. Again, folks, this is why I tried to tell you when the schedule came out. This is the best thing that could happen to the Giants. Get Dallas opening day in Dallas when they're not going to be prepped for the game. They're not going to be at their best.
I think a similar comparison, not to get off topic, Paul, is Le'Veon Bell, because Bell had a contractual holdout, so he's a bit rusty. You wonder how much they're going to pin
on
him.
Can't give him 25 carries
this Sunday.
No,
I would agree.
You can't.
I think you're going to have to work in some other options as well. And then you gain momentum as the season progresses to get the player back up to 25 carries or so. But regardless of how many carries Elliott gets, and I'm not a big believer that the distraction is a big storyline, mainly because I think when guys get on the field, they focus on the task at hand and they're not necessarily thinking about what happened or what transpired.
It
could
be a distraction from the preparation. I don't think it has anything to do with Sunday night itself once they kick the ball off. I agree with you. A hit's a hit.
Yeah.
A catch is a catch and a run is a run. But in terms of focus for preparation, again, I know enough about the media after being in for a long time, and so do you, to have to deal with those stupid questions and headlines all the time, regardless of what it is. And I'm not calling Elliott's in particular situation stupid. I'm just saying that from a coach's perspective, any type of distracting questions or storyline are stupid things that affect the team's focus in their preparation. And that can have a bit of an effect on what happens in the game.
One other thing I want to get to, and this is part of the storylines and track record and trend that goes into this Giants-Cowboys rivalry before we get back to the lines, is, and you and I were talking about this before we got on the air, I was looking back since 2011, 12 games, Paul. And this just goes to show you, regardless of the differences in personnel and the changes that happen from team to team, a lot of these affairs come down to the wire, and I think recent history has shown that. So of the 12 games going back to 2011, all but 2 have been decided by a touchdown or less. And the 2 double-digit wins, one for each team, the Cowboys won in the first game in 2014, the Giants won the 2011 regular season finale here at MetLife Stadium that helped them get to the division title as well as into the playoffs and ultimately win the Super Bowl, came down to one possession games in the fourth quarter. So that just goes to show you, you've got a lot of nail biters over the course of recent history.
Well, last year, 20-19 and 10-7.
So both less than a field goal.
And I'm going to stand by what I said to Lance before, and I'll tell the same thing to you folks. I don't think those two games last year were that close. The score was not indicative of who controlled the game and who clearly deserved to win those games, but they came down to nail biters on the scoreboard anyway, because that's the way, as Lance has so very aptly pointed out to you, this series has gone for the past decade. It just has to be that way. The score has to be in doubt. It's got to come down to the final couple minutes of the game, because these two teams are just going to give you drama, especially in prime time, national television. They're going to give you drama. And I'm telling you now, folks, I think the Giants are 10-point team better than the Dallas Cowboys. I think they're at least a touchdown on a field goal better. I don't think there's any doubt they will outplay them, and they will deserve to win the game. But what will the scoreboard say? We know that the ball bounces funny. Crazy things happen sometimes. Crazy penalties happen sometimes.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, before you know it, it's a one-point game again with a minute and 25 to go. So I'm not going to be surprised if the score turns out that way. What I will be surprised about is if the Giants are outplayed on Sunday, because I don't believe they will be.
Well, they did a nice job in the second matchup, especially. The first matchup, the Cowboys were able to move the football. If you go back, they put together a lot of lengthy drives. The difference was, Paul, they did not turn those lengthy drives
red
into
zone
touchdowns. That's where the Cowboys struggled, but they were able to move the football. The second matchup, Dallas struggled to even
move
the football, struggled on third down conversions. Aside from that early touchdown, Dak to Terrence Williams, Dallas took an early 7-0 lead. They didn't score the rest of the game.
You will recall that second matchup was at MetLife Stadium, and I had done the research that indicated Dak Prescott has problems in bad weather, in cold and wet weather. He showed even in college he had trouble. And what happened? It was cold and nasty that night, and Dak Prescott had a bad game. Now, I'm not going to say that's the only reason, because I think the Giants' defense really clamped on him, and they had seen him once before. Even Landon Collins had said to me the other day, we know him now. I said, it makes a difference? He said, oh, yeah. We now have a full year of film on him. We've played him twice. We now know him a lot better than we did before. That's to our advantage. We know what his tendencies are. We know where he wants to throw it. We know the routes he wants to throw. We know when he wants to tuck it down. We got a beat on him now. Let's see.
The only other thing I'll add to that is, at the same time, Dak has film and comfort level with its respect to the Giants' defense, too, you can argue.
Except he's only a second-year player, and second-year players don't have the experience to put that information to use.
Well, and that's fair. I'm not going to disagree, but I think that,
you know, a 10-year player, I'd say differently.
But I think that since the Giants' defensive personnel hasn't drastically changed, I think he at least has a little bit more understanding of the scheme and the principles. And the reason why I bring that up is when Dak met with the Cowboys media yesterday, mm-hmm. he was asked about what was the difference between what the Giants showed you in the second game versus the first game. He said they mix things up much more so than any other defense that he went up against last season. Mm-hmm. Dak admitted that. He pointed that out.
That's Spags.
Correct. That's Spags.
That's what
he
does.
That's his MO. So I don't think anybody was surprised to hear that. But I guess my point is, between two games, I think he at least understands the core of the principle of the Giants defense at this point. You can make an argument.
Well, that certainly makes a lot of sense, because Dak was an unknown commodity when the Giants played him the first time.
Yeah.
And so Spags wasn't going to get all fancy and loosey-goosey by trying to trick him. It's like, wait a minute. We're going to play the guy basically straight up, because we don't know what he is.
Get a feel for him.
So let's just go in there like a boxer and, like you said, feel him out. So I expected a more vanilla game plan the first time and a much more complex game plan in number two. And, again, this time around, it'll be a more complex game plan again. And they will bait, and they will try to trick him, and they will try to get Dak thinking all kinds of things. And that's the beauty of it, because I think a second-year quarterback usually is going to be at a disadvantage in that situation, because the Giants are the ones who are going to dictate to Dak, okay, what they're going to do. That's Bill Parcells taught me this decades ago, and I want to make something very clear to you, Lance. I still believe it, but you have to be a good team to pull it off. You have to impose your will on the other team. You have to make them react to you. You have to do what you do so well that they're the ones making the adjustments. I think the Giants are a good enough team right now, okay, right now, this 53, that they can do that to the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. I believe that. In the past, not as much. Last year, the Giants got to that level. This year, they're even beyond that level. And that's why I feel like I do about this game.
Well, one team stops the run effectively, that being the Giants. The other team runs the ball effectively. Giants did a nice job containing Elliott more so than any other team last season. So if they could duplicate that, certainly bodes very well for them moving forward into this campaign. All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. T gets us started in Maryland. T, what's happening?
I'm the leadoff batter. Dots, how you doing?
Hi.
Hey, guys, I just wanted to say I had a chance to listen to you guys all summer. We've been going back and forth, and now we're less than, 72 hours away from game time. It's going to be a great season, and I'm kind of – Lance, I normally always – this is going to sound, like a homer thing because I'm a big Lance Meadow fan, but I normally always agree with you. But on this one, I got to go with Paulie on this one. I don't think in the – the year that Dak Prescott has had to sit and watch film and be a studious quarterback as he's turning out to be, I don't think he can decipher Spags' defense, because even Drew Brees had trouble with that, and he's seen the defense and even played with it, and he had trouble in that second game before these guys even had a chance to gel. And I'm with Paul. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Those games last year, as close as they were, they weren't indicative of how it was played. And I honestly think it's going to be a 17-point victory. And here it is. I'm saying it right now. Paul Perkins will have over 120 yards on the ground.
Huh?
Whoa.
That's a bold predictions there.
17 points and 120 for Perkins.
I'm putting it all on the
table. Both of them. Yeah. Well, that's why I said we think that both of them are bold, because we went over the track record. A 17-point victory would be the largest since 2011, when the Giants beat the Cowboys here in East Rutherford. And then for Paul Perkins to have over 120 would be a brand new career high for him.
T, let me ask you something. If Perkins runs for 75 and the Giants win by one, are you still going to sleep Sunday night?
I'm going to sleep like a baby, Paulie.
Okay. Just checking.
Hey, love you guys. You guys have a great day, and I'll talk to you guys sometime next week.
Sounds good,
you
T.
Got it.
Appreciate the phone call.
All right.
Well, if they can stop the run, and if they could force Dak Prescott into turnovers, which they did in the second matchup. They didn't necessarily do that in the first matchup.
Well, they did that to everybody in the second half of the season. They really became a turnover defense after the midpoint.
Much more opportunistic in the second half. If they could do those two things, I think that a 17-point victory is very realistic under those circumstances. But remember, we've gone back and forth with this over the summer. Fluky statistic. Takeaways. Very fluky.
And it's this rivalry, which won't let it happen. The rivalry's going to force it to be a nail-biter with 2 minutes to go. You just know it's going to happen, Lance.
Well, because it's the type of rivalry that even teams that jump out to a 10 or a 17-point victory, then, boom, in the fourth quarter, we get a one-possession game. Because teams have a hard time maintaining those cushions and maintaining those leads.
It's almost destined. It's like it's got to be a crunch-time thriller. Even though it shouldn't be. It's going to be. You just know it's going to be.
Well, for the non-Giants and Cowboys fans, it's extremely enjoyable.
That's why NBC
that's
wants
why you
the
want
game
to tune
every
in.
Year.
For the people that are invested in this affair, that's when you start to lose your nails, and maybe unlike T, you don't sleep too well. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Timothy's in Jacksonville, Florida. Timothy, what's happening? How are we doing, Timothy?
Hi.
How are we doing, Timothy? What's happening?
Nothing. I got a question. Will Odell Beckham be ready for the season opener in Dallas?
Well, the signs are pretty good right now, but as Coach McAdoo said yesterday, ultimately it comes down to the medical staff giving him a thumbs up or a thumbs down. If Beckham gives them the information that they need to hear after he does some of his working out and some of his testing on the ankle, and the medical staff says, okay, that sounds like you're all right, you're good to go, they're going to rely on him to give them honest feedback. They always do. The Giants, the Giants medical staff will talk to the players, and they'll tell their injured players, you got to tell us what you feel. We're going to test you. We're going to try to push you. We're going to do this, do that. Tell me what you feel. And if they hear something they don't like, they go to the coach and they say, thumbs down. He's scratched. He's not playing. We're telling you, we're medically shutting him down. He is a no-go. If what they hear sounds like, okay, this doesn't sound dangerous, there's not a lot of risk here, then they tell coach, he's cleared, now it's up to you. Coach has already told us. He gets a thumbs up from medical. Doesn't matter if Beckham practices. He's playing in the game.
And plus, we've seen previous Giants who haven't practiced. Remember, Ahmad Bradshaw went through a number of weeks, Paul, when he was with the team.
Well, Beckham did that last week in London. He had a sprained knee going into the Rams game over in England. Did not practice during the week. Game time decision. I remember being in the stadium at Tottenham and watching about 2 hours before kickoff. Remember, 90 minutes before kickoff is when you have to have your inactives in. And they were down there, the training staff, with coach and with Beckham. And he was stretching out. He was doing sprints. He was running some routes. You could see he wasn't quite right, but he was still making it happen. And they said, okay, you know what? We think you can play without risking further injury. Beckham said, I'm going to do it. Let's play. Jerry Reese McAdoo, yep, let's go. They put in the inactive list, and Beckham was not on the list. He caught three passes, including a key third down conversion in the red zone that led to Rashad Jennings' touchdown as the Giants beat the Rams. So he may not be 100%. He may not have a great game. But ultimately, if the doctor says he's not a heavy risk, he's going to play.
And Timothy, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. He spoke to the media yesterday, Paul. And he didn't necessarily give a percentage, seemed hopeful, seemed itching to get on the field. Correct. Eager would be a very good term as well. But wasn't necessarily guaranteeing that he'd be on the field and
well,
wasn't saying he's 80 versus 20%.
He can't.
Correct. And he shouldn't because there's no point of giving false hope. But I think that even if he is not able to practice today because we don't have the full practice report, and even if he's listed as questionable on the injury report heading into the game, which in all likelihood he may, and that's just me purely speculating. There's no necessarily indication that that's going to happen.
I think it's a safe bet for us to say, and this is not the Giants speaking because they're going to have to release their injury report officially later on today and during the course of the week. If we were to say game time decision, I don't think that's out
correct.
Of the question.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And we've seen players, they go out there, they warm up, they give the thumbs up to the coaching staff, the medical staff gives a thumbs up to them, and then they suit up. The other thing I think that bodes well for Beckham is, and I'm a big track record guy, he hasn't missed a game, and he's dealt with a few injuries, has not missed a game because of injury. I know that he was suspended for that late season game against the Vikings 2 years ago, but has not missed a game because of injury going back his rookie year when he missed the first four because of a hamstring.
Right.
Outside of that, he's been able to suit up. When he's
still out. He's a tough kid.
Yeah.
And a very, very hot, fiery competitor. He does not want to miss this game. But, again, it's not going to be up to him. The medical staff is going to give him the thumbs up or the thumbs down. I will say this. He has a very high pain tolerance. So that's not going to keep him out. It's going to be the medical staff, if they decide that he is a heavy risk to further the injury, they will then shut him down.
And then there's the debate about whether or not you would want to put a player in a position where he can re-aggravate the injury. I always say, listen, you can re-aggravate the injury week two. You can re-aggravate the injury week 10. I really don't think the timing of the game.
He could do that in the lunchroom.
Correct. So I don't necessarily buy into that narrative. The other narrative that I don't buy into is the fact that, well, you know, this game is not necessarily the end-all, be-all because it's only week one. Well, it's a divisional game, Paul. And what do we talk about? The importance of the divisional record in terms of indicating the all likelihood and the chances of wrapping up the division. And sometimes you've needed four wins, and that means you can't afford to just split with everybody throughout the season.
Not to mention, if you believe, as the Giants do, that they are a contender, well, every single win is going to affect your playoff seeding and maybe even a bye week. So every game is critical. I know Eli said the other day, that is Manning, that you don't win the Super Bowl in September. He's right. You don't. And if the Giants should somehow lose this game, it doesn't mean that they are no longer Super Bowl contenders. Of course not. I mean, the 86 Giants lost to Dallas opening night when Herschel Walker ran it in, and the 86 Giants wound up dominating and winning the Super Bowl. But given the situation as it stands now in this quicksand of mediocrity league, yeah, it'd be better for the Giants if they win.
Where there's a lot of turnover rate within the division. There's turnover from one season to another in terms of who wins the division. Remember, no team has won back-to-back division titles in the NFC since the Eagles did it four times in a row. And going back to your quote of Eli Manning, yes, you don't win the Super Bowl in September, but by winning games in the division in September, you put yourself in a position to compete for a Super Bowl title. and ultimately try to get into the playoffs. So that's where I would necessarily, you know, twist perhaps and tweak that statement. Let's head back to the phone lines. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing all right, Nick. What do you got for us?
A few things. 21's playing on Sunday night, and I'm glad. Like, you know, I'm not glad because he did what he did, but I want to see him. I want to see one of the best running backs because, remember, we have the best run stuffer in the league. Remember that, fans. And Landon Collins, the other 21 on the other side of the ball, he's going to be putting his hat on him. You'll see. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm looking forward to see all of them put their hats on.
Well, Nick, one of the things that we've always talked about, and I'll let you continue. I know you probably want to make a few other points, but the Giants have always, on paper, matched up very well with the Cowboys. So,
yes,
you know, whenever the Cowboys have a strength, usually the Giants have had the personnel to at least contain that. That doesn't mean that they're going to shut them down, but on paper, you have to feel good that the Giants' run stuffers, as you mentioned, their defensive line overall, I think, matches up very well with the Cowboys' offensive line and the ability to contain Ezekiel Elliott. But that still has to be a priority in terms of the scheme.
Oh, yeah.
You can't just snap your fingers and assume, oh, well, we got the big bodies in the trenches and we're automatically going to be able to slow them down.
And, you know, we keep forgetting when we talk about, oh, we have to slow down Elliott if we're, you know, going to beat the Cowboys. I appreciate that, but, you know, Dez Bryant is committed to having a bounce-back year. He's talked all offseason about how he wants to be an elite receiver again because, let's face it, some injuries and some time have kind of taken some of the luster off his gold. And he is, like, just foaming at the mouth to have a great season. Well, guess what? Janoris Jenkins pretty much shut him down last year. And so
I'm looking forward to that matchup, too.
I'm with you. The Giants do
big
need
time.
To stop the run. But they need to make sure that Dez Bryant doesn't make any big plays, too.
I'm just saying I want to see him out there on the field because he's a really good running back. Forget about off the field. I don't like him as a person. But
well,
I want to see him out there on the field, and I want to see the Giants put a hurting on him. That's
you always
want to
play
that, you know?
A team at full health and with their full roster. I never understand an argument, no matter who you're a fan of. I never understand the push to get a player suspended or a player hurt so that you can have them on the sideline. The whole point is you want to see both of these teams at equal health and equal full 100% rosters so that you at least have a comparison and a basis to say, hey, this is how these two teams match up with one another.
I think you want to grab whatever W's you can, and it doesn't matter because
that goes without saying.
Parcells used to say nobody feels sorry for you.
And that's not how I was trying to spin it. I get where you're going. Looking at it. This is how I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it non-biased, okay? You don't have any investment in either team, and you're just talking about purely NFL football. You want to see how two teams match up at full strength, period.
Well, especially
that's
since the Cowboys are the defending division champs and the Giants want to get there.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks, Nick.
And one other thing.
Yeah, quickly.
Shane Smith. You know, talking about him, I hear some people, you know, when they were saying they're seeing a lot of him. I don't know if anybody realizes how great this is. He's built like Moose Johnston. He's the strongest guy in the combine, you know. And there's another guy on NFL Network who, you know, Heath Evans, another fullback. He, you know, he's a really strong guy. If you've ever watched him do that 225, I think he does it about 47 times. But Shane Smith did it 36 times, and if you watch this kid, all the runs that we got that were big, who was making the lead block, and he pancakes his guys every time. He blocks so well, and Rhett Ellison, Jerry Reese, kudos. You went out and got the best blocking tight end in the NFL, in my eyes. He's another guy. I think this offensive line problem will work itself out just because of those two guys right there, and I'd like to see them with some short yardage stuff with Shane Smith, because you said this before, Paul, when they drafted Evan Engram. McAdoo's from Green Bay. He's got his JerMichael Finley now. Now he has a fullback. So this guy's going to get the job done. I really liked it that they kept this kid. I knew he was going to make the squad. This is really going to help us out big time here. So kudos to Jerry Reese. He goes out and gets one of the best wide receivers in the league, top three, and he got a clone of Sean Taylor on defense. Great job, Jerry Reese.
Hi, Nick. Appreciate the phone call.
I think the Giants will try to run the ball against Dallas, and why not? Their defensive line is a bit suspect, and the Giants are hoping that their running game gets things going, and why not? I mean, I think in the last two preseason games, they showed some aptitude to start running the ball, and they need to prove it in a regular season game now.
And they also showed the utilization of the fullback, too, in the preseason, which I think could be an indication of how they try to utilize Shane Smith and Rhett Ellison. And remember, go back to week one last year, Paul, four-minute offense. Giants utilized Brett Jones as the fullback. They didn't have a fullback on the roster, but they put Brett Jones in the fullback, and then Rashad Jennings had a number of big runs to help milk the clock. Now, Dallas still got another possession, but the point is it was one of their most effective eating up the clock drives in that game.
And they won't need Brett Jones to do that now because they have Ellison
they have the
and
personnel.
They have Smith.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for that.
Before we jump back to the Lions, I was going to ask you a question. I can't remember the last time Nick in the Meadowlands had a phone call where he didn't go back to the 1950s and the 1960s and reference a Giant. I'm actually a little disappointed. He went to Darryl Moose Johnston, former Cowboy, and Sean Taylor, a former Redskin, before we got to the ancient history of the Giants.
But those are older players.
They are, but normally his track record is he gets you to dust off the historical archives. So I'm a little disappointed, Nick. I have to be honest. I don't know necessarily if hashtag Giants chat is disappointed, but I'm a little personally disappointed. All right, let's head back to the Lions. Dave's in Cranford. Dave, what's happening?
How are you, Lance? How are you, Paul?
Hi.
Great. Doing
all right,
Dave.
You guys.
Same here. Appreciate the phone call. What do you got for us?
So I want to use a couple of DeTino's phrases. I want to peel back the onion. I want to talk about the chess match and get into a couple X's and O's. And there's some interesting stuff. I'm a little addicted to it. So I was listening to some of the Dallas talk around how they're going to cover the Giants, and I found it very fascinating. They're very the coverage coming out of Dallas. They're very concerned with Evan Engram, as they should be. And I know he's not a quarterback, so I know it's a different position. But they have the same problem that we had going into Week One last year against Dak, which is they just don't know how the Giants are going to use him. And they can guess, but they've got no film on him, and you know they can go back and see how he can play. The interesting information, and Paul, this is what I'd like to get your comment on, is they're saying that they think that Byron Jones will be the matchup and will be able to neutralize Evan Engram. And my only point to that is I think if – let's just assume – I'm not sure Byron Jones can neutralize Evan Engram, but let's just assume that he can. Let's go there and just say, you know what, he's athletic, he yada, 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 he can cover him. I think that's a win for the Giants. If Byron Jones, who's really one of their best free safeties and cover, you know, guys, has to put all of his attention onto Evan Engram, I think that's exactly what the Giants are hoping for because it frees up everything else. So I'd just like to get your thoughts.
Couldn't agree with you more. I mean, look, we've said this before, that Engram is going to be a tampered to zone buster. And if they've got to have a safety worried about a Giants tight end going downfield on a route, that means they're not going to be able to cheat on Marshall. They're not going to be able to cheat on Beckham. And they're not going to be able to cheat on Sterling Shepard. Not that most teams cheated on Shepard anyway.
Yeah.
But those guys should have a field day. Your comment is typical of exactly why Engram was drafted, because that's the kind of problem that the Giants are hoping to create.
Couldn't agree more. How do you see, Paul, them playing them zone or man to man? How is that Dallas secondary going to play our receivers?
Well, Nolan Carroll is not one of your better corners. He had a lot of trouble playing in Philadelphia. That's why the Eagles, who do not have a great secondary, at least at the corner spot, they got safeties, but they don't have corners. Why do you think they allowed him to go free agent? He just does not cover very well. So the Giants should have a field day, you know, chewing him up for lunch. On the other side, you got Scandrick. He's been around a long time. He's had an up-and-down career. At some points, he's been really good. At other points, he hasn't been really good. I don't think the Cowboys' corners can play man-to-man against the Giants. I don't think they have a chance in the world if they try.
Well, Scandrick's the guy they'll move into the slot because Anthony Brown, who had a very good rookie campaign, who I would make the argument could very well go down as their best corner this season, even though he doesn't have a lot of experience.
It
wouldn't surprise me.
It could happen.
Because I saw flashes last season, so I think
that's when the Giants are three wide. I don't think they're going to be three wide 90% of the time like they were last year.
So meaning if they stick with then two wide receivers, you're saying that the Cowboys personnel would have to worry about?
I think that's an issue.
No, but maybe Nolan Carroll's not on the field as much as we anticipate. I could see them maybe going with Scandrick and Anthony Brown. I think those are your two best options if you're the Cowboys at corner.
Teams usually lean to the veteran in the first game.
The tallest midget in the circus. I mean, that's.
I think that if I'm the Cowboys, I would try to blitz a lot. He
will
do that.
He's their defensive coordinator.
And they do have a speedy defense. Now, even though there's some inexperience there and there are a lot of changing parts, what we do know is that they have a lot of speed on defense. And while you don't usually want to blitz Eli Manning because he's smart enough to figure it out, that's probably their best hope. Because I think they'll run blitz because they'll try to effectively shut down a Giants running game because we don't even know what the Giants running game is going to be. So I think they'll run blitz, and I think they'll also pass blitz. And I think they'll do that thinking that we can't hold up in the secondary anyway. We might as well take our chances by just throwing the kitchen sink at the quarterback.
I also wouldn't be surprised, Dave, if they move around Sean Lee in a variety of positions. I'm not saying that he's an excellent coverage guy, but he's a lot better than most linebackers in this league. And remember, he had 18 tackles against the Giants in the second matchup. He single-handedly, not that the Giants had a strong running game last season, but he took away that entire running game element in the second matchup alone, which gave the secondary a lot of flexibility to do their thing.
Now,
so how Lee plays, I think, could dictate a lot for that Cowboys defense.
Now the Giants have Shane Vereen back, though. And that could be a problem because Sean Lee may have to worry about Shane Vereen coming out of the backfield.
Well, remember, though, Vereen played both games last season.
Wasn't himself.
I know he wasn't, but that was the second matchup was he already returned from the injury, but then he re-aggravated against the Lions the following week.
He just wasn't himself.
I'm not going to deny that, but he was on the field. It was somebody they at least had to account for, is my point.
They'll have to be more aware of him this time.
Only for a half, though, Lance. Only for a half in that the second game because he got hurt right away.
No, he got hurt against the Lions. He did not get hurt in that Cowboys game. He was in that game the whole time. He got hurt. He re-aggravated the injury against Detroit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, but he wasn't himself. He was not the same
player.
I mean,
he certainly wasn't 100% because he was still coming back from the injury. I buy that, but he was definitely on the field, though, and they had access to him throughout the game.
I'll give you one little caveat here. You know what I want you to watch for? I want you to watch for how many important passes Red Ellison catches during the game. Because everybody's talking about all these other superstars and these big-name guys and these threats that the Giants can throw on the field. What happens if Red Ellison catches four or five balls for 55 yards, but four of them are for first downs, and keep the chains moving on third down? What if he even catches a touchdown pass? You can't cover all the guys the Giants have. You could do all you want scheming around it, but Red Ellison is a heck of a football player, and he can catch. I think I've seen him drop one pass all summer.
Well, remember that one drive, three out of the four plays went to Ellison in the preseason.
Against the Jets.
Was it against the Jets or I felt like it was
earlier?
Pittsburgh.
Maybe it was the first preseason.
I think it was the first preseason game. So they have shown that they're willing to mix him in there.
They're not afraid to get him the ball. And let me tell you something. If you're the defense, he's the last guy out of all the guys you got to worry about and you're going to think about covering. He's the last guy you're going to think about. He's going to be ignored on a bunch of plays. And if Eli finds him, that's going to be gimme yardage.
Yep. I will leave you guys with this. And that is simply to say, I'm very happy that we're not facing the old Dallas secondary. And they're talking about this new revamped secondary, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, they left a lot of snaps and a lot of tackles off that field between Barry Church and Morris Claiborne and you know, Carr. And those guys got up for Giants, and they always did. And they played well against us. And the fact that they think that this new secondary is going to hold up, I mean, maybe they will, but you know what? It's a big question mark going into the game. I'll leave you with that.
Well,
the guys he's
talking about were all experienced veterans who had been through every situation you could think of, and certainly the Giants-Cowboys rivalry was not too big for them. And I think that's also part of the reason why, as veterans, they'd get up for those games, and they would be extremely competitive, and they would get you some drama. Again, I'm with you. I don't see how this secondary is going to be up to the task.
Well, but remember, there's also a reason why they parted ways with those guys, too.
No question.
So, I mean, I'd be careful by saying, and I understand, I think they made a good point, but to say that you're excited about not facing the old regime when, remember, Beckham had a very good track record against Brandon Carr, who usually was on him when Beckham made those spectacular. But I'm not just talking about the great pass.
But other than that.
Well, Beckham hasn't had huge numbers against the Cowboys.
He's had some important catches.
Correct.
But he hasn't put up scoreboard numbers.
But other players have had big numbers, because if you look at Eli's numbers against the Cowboys, he's had success down the field.
I gave Eli's numbers. I want to repeat this. I was on yesterday with Russ Salzburg.
I may have it on my sheet here.
Do you have the numbers on one of the sites here? Eli's numbers against the Cowboys, only a 13-12 career record, which, of course, doesn't sound so great. But here's what I want you to remember. Those losses, they were not on him. Eli Manning has actually thrown the ball extremely well against the Cowboys, because during the course of his career against them, he has averaged 250 yards a game, 61% completion mark, with 48 touchdowns and only 25 interceptions. That's a 2-to-1 ratio. Eli has put up some very good performances against the Cowboys.
And that's why, like I said, I wouldn't think that it's necessarily a huge benefit to see this revamped secondary. Plus, you know, here's the other thing. Nolan Carroll's been in the division. That doesn't mean that he's a great corner, but he understands what the rivalry is about within the division.
Yeah,
even
he also
though he
understands
wasn't with the team.
How to get burnt.
Well, no doubt about that. He's had his struggles, too. Skandrick's been in this rivalry for quite some time. Byron Jones has been around for the last few years. Even Jeff Heath, who's their other starting safety. You know, Heath, even though he didn't start last season, he's been with the team for a few seasons, and they've utilized him because they've rotated some of their safeties. So, I mean, these guys have been exposed to this rivalry. I don't know if it's a drastic different mindset with some of these new players who at least are starting for the first time. Let's head back to the lines. Bryce is in New York. Bryce, what's happening?
Hi, guys. First-time caller. I just wanted to talk about, everybody talks about the secondary and how good Landon Collins is and Janoris Jenkins, but I feel like nobody is really thinking about the guy who didn't play at all last year, and that's Darian Thompson, who I think is really going to have a big year in his second year, especially because I think he pairs perfectly with Landon Collins. I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
Well, Darian Thompson, you know, missed almost the whole season with a foot injury, so the truth of the matter is we're still speculating based on potential. We don't know enough about him as an NFL player to say for sure he's going to be everything we think he's going to be. So I'm a little bit in wait-and-see mode. I think, based on what I saw at Boise State and based on what I saw last summer before he got hurt, I think he's going to be a real asset to this team with his ball-hawking capabilities, and I think he's a great complement to Landon Collins. I think the Giants are going to be very happy with him. I think he's going to be a quality NFL starter. But I have to say, you need to take a grain of salt with that, because we don't have enough of a body of work at the NFL level to say for sure that he's going to be as good as we think he is.
And in fairness, if we're questioning the Cowboys secondary with so
many
new faces, I don't think fairly you can then give a huge advantage to the Giants with Darian Thompson, Bryce, considering, as Paul mentioned, he got hurt in the second game of the season against the Saints and then unfortunately was put on IR. So I think from a schematic standpoint, and the both of you alluded to this, they're great fits, because Landon Collins is a guy that excels down near the box. And Darian Thompson, based on what he did in college, excels as that deep outfielder. So you put them together, they complement one another. We have yet to see whether or not that will truly come to fruition on the field.
Here's the good news. The Cowboys would love to have DRC, Apple, Jenkins, or Collins. The Giants have four defensive backs who would all be starters on the Cowboys in a moment's notice. So Thompson just has to fit in to a terrific secondary.
Yeah.
The Cowboys don't have that situation.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he doesn't have to come in and be the savior. You
correct.
Know? So
which is a good position to be in.
Yeah, he just has to do what they ask him to, and I think he'll make plays just naturally based on his ball skills.
Well, and a great comparison to your point, Paul, is Jay Bromley. If he does start this week, I know he's still dealing with an injury, he's in the same position as Darian Thompson. Because look at the talent you're playing alongside. You don't have to come in. That doesn't mean you don't have to play well, but you don't have to feel as if you're shouldering so much of the load.
Well, either Robert Thomas or Dalvin Tomlinson can feel the same thing if they start.
All right, Bryce. Appreciate the phone call.
All right, thanks, guys.
You got it. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the lines. We got Ed in Rochester. Ed, welcome aboard. What do you got?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Looking forward to this game on Sunday and the season. I'm going to be coming down to my annual game to see the Chargers in October. So looking forward to that.
Very nice.
But so, just about what I'm calling about, a couple things really quick on the Ellison deal. What I usually do when we pick up a free agent of substance, I touch base with some of my friends that are fans of other teams, and all the Viking fans I know were pretty displeased that they let Ellison go. And they've told me that he's going to be a really nice player for our team. So I just wanted to build on that. But the reason why I'm calling, I think what's going to come down to this game on Sunday night, and I guess I'll try to phase it best I can, is on the offensive side of the ball, of what I call the plays like, why did we just do that plays? Why did that just happen? If we can eliminate those kind of plays where maybe Eli throws a bad interception, somebody runs a bad route, maybe whoever fault it is, or we have a sack fumble, or we have a bad play call on a third and three, and those happen in this type of game, I think if we can eliminate those against Dallas, I think we can win this. I know we can win this game. We always have those kind of plays when we play Dallas, and you'll be shaking your head going, why did we just do that? So I want to get your take on my feedback there.
I think 32 teams in the NFL could say that about four or five plays every single
weekend.
I
was going to say the same thing. I don't think it's unique to Giants Cowboys. I agree.
But it just seems to be when we play Dallas on this Sunday night, I don't know, maybe they're just highlighted more because of the rivalry, and, you know, you're trying to close the game out and something just happens. You go, why did we just do that? And either let them stay in the game or not put the game away. That's guess what I'm saying for Sunday night.
I don't know that there's anything, biting to what you're saying. I think that the league is so full of parity, so full of mediocrity that, you know, you're going to have a handful of plays that you will second guess. Not only Sunday night, you'll be second guessing a Monday when you call into the show at 12 o'clock.
Sure.
You know, that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, this league does not have much of a separation after the Patriots. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's not like the 80s and 90s, you know? I mean, I will say this. I do believe that the Giants, coming off of yesterday's practice, Coach McAdoo said that he thought it was an outstanding practice. And he said, if I can get a practice like this in December, we're going to be in really good shape.
Mm-hmm.
He feels his team is focused and primed to go. So I'd like to believe, based on that, that they won't make any sloppy mistakes or things that are going to make you scratch your head or bounce your head off of a brick wall. I'd like to believe that, but I can't promise you.
and it might be more, it's probably more of a passionate fan thing. I just throw it out there, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in October. When we come down, I'll stop and say hello.
Please do.
Absolutely. I'd appreciate the phone call. And I think a lot of what Ed was alluding to has to do with the fact of what we were talking about earlier, Paul. When you have so many games that are close and are nail-biters that go down to the wire, you sometimes remember that costly mistake.
No doubt.
That ultimately decided the outcome of the contest.
How did the coaches feel?
Of course, yeah.
That's what keeps those guys up at night.
Yeah.
They relive. Oh, that third down play or that second down call that I made. Oh, and they agonize. They agonize for nights and nights after the game about that one thing they could have done differently that might have changed the result. That's why coaching is such a brutal profession. That's why a lot of great players who are very intelligent players don't want to go into coaching because it can be gut-wrenching.
They want to keep the remaining hairs that they still have on their head as opposed to losing them because of that stress. And one of the things that I was going to point out to emphasize what we were just talking about, Paul, is, I mean, and I'm not trying to bring back bad memories here, but the game that Jason Witten caught the game-winning touchdown when Dallas drove all the way down the field, you know, you make a stop there, maybe that game ends differently or something differently goes in terms of when Eli Manning and company had the ball in the red zone or on special teams. The year that JPP blocked the field goal in another nail-biter.
You know what?
All those things come into play
Let's
when you think about this rivalry.
Let's talk about that Witten touchdown when Uwani Unga
young
was
linebacker.
An undrafted rookie free agent, and he had made the team. They were hurting at the position. He's playing against Dallas in that game down at Jerry's place, and he busts the coverage in the red zone, and Witten catches the touchdown and beats the Giants. And I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind that if there's a veteran on the field there, he doesn't have that mental block. And maybe there's a chance that the defense makes the play and Witten doesn't catch the pass. But Uwani Unga was in over his head in on that particular play at that particular time. And his mental block was probably, I don't want to point a finger, but probably the reason that Witten was able to get free and win that ball game. Now, B.J. Goodson's taken 14 defensive snaps in his NFL career. For all practical purposes, he's kind of a rookie middle linebacker, right?
Absolutely. I don't think anybody should argue that.
Now,
14 defensive snaps.
He's got many more skills than Onyeka did. He was a draft pick out of Clemson, which is a big-time program. The Giants believe that he has progressed enough where he's probably going to be a three-down linebacker in this game, okay, especially because Keenan Robinson's not available in the sub-package.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, folks, B.J. Goodson really seems to have a grasp as to what's going on, but he will probably make some rookie mistakes, and not just in this game, but during the course of the season. It's going to happen. He's not going to be perfect. You know, he's not a 10-year vet. For the Giants' sake, you want to hope Jason Witten doesn't take advantage of one of those mistakes in a key spot. So you make a very good point.
And I think that if you're the Cowboys, which I'm glad you brought that up, you know, we were talking about if you're the Giants, what are you going to look to attack in terms of the Cowboys'
defense? You want
defense?
To isolate Goodson.
If you're Dallas, you check Goodson where he is out on the field and you see, all right, let's test him. Because remember, the one of the things that we talked
you're
about.
You're not testing the other guys because we know what they can
they're
do.
They're proven commodities and they've been in this defense. But now that you have a new guy being the voice of the defense, the communicator between Spags and the rest of the personnel, if you're Dallas, I think you want to test him out early and see what he could do. And the other reason why I say I think you want to test him out is, remember, Ben McAdoo talked about this throughout training camp. They've been trying to test him out, the Giants, I'm saying, in terms of coverage.
Self-test.
They haven't been necessarily taking him off the field for those third down passing situations. And when does Dak and Tony Romo look for Jason Witten? On those third down conversions where they need 5 or 6 yards. Mm-hmm. Would not surprise me if Dallas says, let's see what B.J. Goodson could do early in this game, because Witten has been a Giants killer, no matter who the quarterback has been.
Well, here's the thing. I would think, first of all, if I were Dallas, I would not only try to attack Goodson in any one-on-one matchup that I could get. It could even be a running back coming out of the backfield. I want to try to isolate him whenever I possibly can. The other thing I'm going to try to do, I'm going to try a bunch of misdirection runs because I want to see if he's going to be so excited, so over-anxious that he over-pursues.
And then can't cut back
yes.
in time.
That's what I would do. If I were to – Dallas, I know you're not listening to our show. I totally understand that. But if you were, that's probably what you're going to try to do. Now, is Goodson going to be able to hold his water and take care of business? Nobody knows that.
Now, interestingly, on this subject, hashtag Giants chat, and want to get some tweets involved for those of you who didn't have an opportunity to get to the phone, at Gruen Ben, this to me I think may be ultra confidence in Goodson if they showcase – their desire to do this. I think Spags unleashes B.J. Goodson on some blitz packages on their new left guard is what he's throwing out here. Now, we did see him a little bit, but that was in the preseason.
He had 2 sacks in the preseason.
Where he
blitzes.
Was right up on the line.
He did.
Question is, are they going to then put him in that position right away early on in week 1?
I could see it because you want to give Dak a lot of questions to answer. You want him to be thinking a lot. You want him to react to you. And that's an aggressive mentality. Again, that's imposing your will on the guy. So if you put Goodson up on the line a couple of times early in the game and send him on a blitz or two, now Dak has to start thinking about that. Look, maybe this guy's coming. Maybe he's not playing the run, or maybe he's not going back in coverage. Maybe they're sending him instead. That would give Dak another thing to think about. That's actually not a bad idea.
I just think, and this is going based
and he's
on
quick enough
Spags'
to do
track record, certainly has quickness. I would think, though, that Spags would lean more towards having a secondary blitz, which he's more known for than necessarily maybe putting Goodson in that spot. And we saw that, I remember, against the Saints last year, week 2. You know, some of the things that set up Drew Brees in a very tough predicament was because he gave Janoris Jenkins the green light to go at Drew Brees right off the line of scrimmage. And I could see them trying to fluster Dak Prescott that way as well.
The Giants are certainly not afraid because of Spags to send corners and or safeties, you know, in a pressure package. Again, though, you know, even if you're not going to do it a lot, if you just send Goodson once or twice in the first quarter, that still puts it in Dak's mind. You don't have to send him the rest of the game. You just got to give that look to Dak and let him know that, hey, you know what? We may bluff it 5 or 6 times during the rest of the game, but if you send him that first time or two, it gives them the look. It gives them the fear that he might be coming. It's not a bad thought.
But remember, what afforded them the opportunity to do that a little bit in both matchups last year is their ability to stop the run.
Well,
because
sure.
If Dak can't lean on Elliott finding the holes,
right.
Now you could say, all right, we've got them where they have to start throwing the football. Now we could take our chances against Dak.
The good news is if you do send Goodson, though, okay, and then Dak decides he's going to opt out against the run, you got your middle linebacker coming on a blitz, and he's quick enough to get there before the running back hits the hole. That's not necessarily much of a gamble because he has the speed to get home. If he didn't have the speed to get home on the blitz, now it's all about picking the right hole to go through. Because if he goes to the A-gap on the one side and the running back is quick enough and goes to the A-gap on the other side, now he breaks it for a big run. But I think that Goodson's quick enough to get into the backfield if Dak were to opt out. I don't think it's a bad idea.
Well, the one thing to remember about Zeke, and we haven't necessarily brought this up, regardless of how fresh or how many carries he gets, he was one of the best in the NFL last year, Paul, in terms of yardage after the initial tackle and the initial hit. He's the type of guy you could close up the hole, and then he still fights for another 2 to 3 yards.
Ben Gruen sends me a tweet right now, and Ben, it's a definitely a heads-up comment. He says you can protect Goodson on a blitz by just making sure Collins is coming down to the box after him. And he's right.
And Collins has shown his versatility.
Oh, and he's not afraid to hit
yeah.
Elliott.
Well, and that's why we were talking about Darian Thompson, too. You know, I think if they can have confidence in him coming down to the box a little bit, too. Remember, we talked about him being that deep outfielder, center fielder in college.
Right.
If he can get a comfort level to provide insurance, then I think you could get a little bit more creative in terms of bringing Collins and Goodson down on a blitz.
This Giants team could be so good, folks. They could be so good. But it's all potential. It's all on paper. You got to show it on the field.
Execution. But it's a good problem to have if you're Spags, that you've got a lot of different toys in the playroom.
He really does.
And I'm sure he's having some sleepless nights wondering how to utilize all these toys. But that doesn't mean that they're going to showcase everything and he's going to take out all the bag of tricks in game number one. But it will certainly be a fun matchup to watch. Well, that's going to wrap up Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thanks so much for your tweets as well as your phone calls. We'll be back up and running tomorrow. We're going to have Mickey Spagnola from DallasCowboys.com joining John Schmelk and I on tomorrow's program to help preview the matchup as we get you set for week one, finally, of the 2017 season. How about this? Football is going to be underway by tomorrow because the Chiefs and the Patriots play tonight.
Excellent. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.